Hard question. How did your faith rise or fall while working in the White House?
Thank you for joining us on the Entrepreneur Dad podcast, where we talk to entrepreneurs, high-level executives, and overall just people that are working their butt off to make a great living for themselves. In this, what we do is we examine their journey, their ups, their downs, their transitions, and also how to remain great spouses and loving parents while managing a full daily schedule. Thank you so much, and I hope you get tons of value out of your time with us.
Do you think that conversation that the guy poked his head in and asked Coach Saban, do you think that was a moment where you went, man, this is powerful? Do you think,
oh, yeah. No, well, no, no, I mean, no.
Like, I didn't even know that happened, and you're talking about that. Here it is however many years later.
Sure.
I mean, again, don't want to get too Sunday school on anybody, but, man, I just think that God puts us in places at certain times to learn mm-hmm. certain things, and who knows? Because I got no doubt that in the next, you know, 15 to 50 years that you're going to do amazing things no matter what you're doing. So, I mean, you went from, you know, political, you know, engine to working in the White House to now at Telegraph, which is an amazing, you know, a marketing agency here in Birmingham. But, man, that instance right there sounds like it was just a landmark.
It was. You know, the great thing about doing the book after I came out of the White House was really having to think deeply about moments like that and what they meant
yeah.
as I was writing. And so it was really cathartic in some ways, but it was also a great learning experience and really kind of codified a lot of the things that
yeah.
I had, these moments that I was able to pull together and write about. And I think about things like, you know, there are things that, like that stick out, even in the White House, even when you're surrounded by this, all this craziness and just
right.
like, I can't believe I'm at the center of, you know, feel like you're at the center of the universe in a way.
Yeah.
There are moments that stick out. I mean, that one, and I'll say another one, Dabo Swinney from
yeah.
Clemson. Clemson won the national championship, came to the White House. And we had the event at the White House, just like we did with Alabama. But then I had a meeting over at the Capitol.
Okay.
And so I went over to the Capitol. And when I got there, Clemson actually had a meeting at the Capitol, too. All their
cool.
whole team, they were going to meet with the Speaker of the House or somebody like that. And so as I approached the Speaker's entrance to the Capitol, there's a line of 100 people outside because it's the whole team. It's
yeah,
like
for sure.
all the coaches, all
yeah.
the trainers, all
yeah,
the you name it, the school administration. And it's the middle of summer, so it's 95 degrees
right.
in D.C. The heat is sweltering. My first thought is like, hey, I work at the White House. I'm going to
yeah.
cut this line, and I'm going to get you whatever. And ended up getting in line and talking to some guys who ended up being from Alabama. We had
cool.
a cool conversation. It was fine, whatever. Get through security. And I'm waiting for my escort from the Speaker's office to come get me. And person after person after person is walking through this security checkpoint. The last person who walked in the door was Dabo Swinney
yeah.
soaking wet because he had stood in the back of that line. And here's the guy who was the most important guy there, the most, you know, famous guy there,
yeah, for sure.
The head coach, whatever. There were no cameras there. No one would ever know this story,
right.
you know, but he had let everybody else in his organization go first without even having to think about it, to the point that he's like drenched in sweat walking
right.
into the door. And that's another one that stuck out to me, is like, what a picture of what servant leadership looks like.
It's like the book Leaders Eat Last. I mean, this is mm-hmm. such a great example of just, I mean, like you said, he right now, he's the highest paid guy in college football.
Mm-hmm.
And he's back of the line, 100 degrees out there. So I'm going to dig a little deeper into the spiritual aspect of this thing. So grew up in a Baptist church. Probably found Jesus at a relatively young age, but then probably the spiritual growth, I don't know when that kind of crested and when you started to really grow in your faith in the Lord, because, I mean, you grew up from a Baptist church into the, you know, you go to Church of Brook Hills, which is an amazing church over the however many years they've been here in Birmingham. Hard question. How did your faith rise or fall while working in the White House? What did it look like there? Was it a time where you went, wow, I struggled, or wow, I grew? Well, tell me about that.
Well, I would say some of both at
yeah.
different points. And some of those times I was just talking about where I was kind of consumed by this kill or be killed mentality,
yeah.
I would say that my faith suffered a lot in those. But also, you know, one of the reasons why hard times or pain is so important is it exposes us to elements of God's character that we otherwise would not have. You know, we get to suffer Christ suffered for us, right? So with suffering can reap incredible spiritual rewards. And part of that is, you know, it draws you closer to God when you're having to suddenly say, hey, I'm not in control.
Right.
And so I've got to rely on God for these things. And there were definitely moments in the White House where I realized, like, I am not in control. Yeah. And it challenged me to go deeper in my faith and put more trust in Christ, that he's ordering my steps. If I look back to how I got to Enterprise and my family gets there at the center, you start looking back over your life and you say, God has never left me alone. Right. You know, even when I didn't care, he cared. And so I think that was part of what happened while I was in the White House was having to rely on God in a way that I never had before. Because those of us who are, again, wired as entrepreneurs or wired as go-getters, it's like, you know what, I'm going to figure this out.
Figure it out.
You know what, at some points you can't figure it out. And you know, having to let go in that way, I think, was an important learning experience for me. The thing that is my greatest regret from working in the White House is that I was not a better picture of my faith to the people that I worked with.
Right.
You know, it's a dark place that D.C. in general is, you know, not very conducive to having a, you know, this kind of work-life balance, if you want to call it that, but also, like, you know, making your faith the central part of your life, which is so important to us. And so I had an opportunity to be a bright light in a very dark place, and instead I allowed myself to be consumed by the darkness a lot of times. So that's, I write it in my book, it's my greatest regret working in the White House, is I was not a better picture of my faith to the people I work with and to the president himself.
Wow. Talking about your book, how'd that book deal come about? How did somebody come to you and say, hey, I'll pay you this much money if you write a book? I mean, like, was it just like that deal, or was it like, hey, I'm going to write a book?
Well, when I left, I started thinking about what I wanted to do next. And you know, I did think that I had some really interesting stories, but also just, you know, every book that had been written about the Trump White House was either a hit job that I know for a fact where they're full of things that were not true, or kind of a sycophantic portrayal of it's the greatest thing of all time, or it was a journalist book where they're relying on secondhand sources.
Yeah.
I felt like that there was a really need at this point in history for someone who is willing to just shoot straight and say, I was there, this is my firsthand experience, here's the good, bad, and otherwise, everything in between, including about myself.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I was uniquely positioned to write that book. And so just through mutual friends, got connected to these book agents, a company called Javelin, who represent a lot of, you know, big authors across the political spectrum, and sat down with them and started telling them what I was thinking and telling them some of my stories and what I wanted to write. They got really excited about it. And actually, the book proposal that went to the publisher, I was very concerned at this time. I didn't want it to get out that I was thinking about writing a book.
Yeah.
And so they stripped all the identifying details out of the proposal. It was an anonymous proposal that they put in front of a publisher and said, we're going to either take this out to auction, or you have an option. We took it to you first. We thought you were the perfect fit if you want. And they offered a 7-figure deal by the end of the day.
That's
awesome. And so that was how that came together. It's kind of crazy.
Now, so do you view yourself as an author? I mean, is there another book? I asked that question. Is there another book in the future?
They've already been talking to me about wanting to write another one, but in a way, I don't know what else I have to say right now. You know, like I said, they want to capitalize on, oh, the Trump thing, and oh, you write another. Well, it's like I kind of said all I have to say about that.
Pretty big book.
I wouldn't be opposed to writing another book if I had the right concept and something that I felt strongly about, but I don't have that concept right now.
Gotcha. At the White House, leave the White House, write the book, Telegraph. Tell us about how that came about and how that's going, and just give me some insight.
Yeah, so I came out of the White House, I had a lot of different opportunities that I could have jumped on, and I ran communications for some pretty large projects like tax reform bill, largest tax cut in American history, you know. So, you know, these financial services firms and others who, you know, were offering me jobs, whether it was in D.C. or New York or whatever. And I wanted to get back home. I wanted to come back to Alabama. The quality of life here, people don't realize, you know, how great it is at a fraction of the cost of what it would be in Manhattan or D.C. And so I knew I wanted to come home, and Kevin McClendon, who is a longtime friend of mine, is the founder of Telegraph. Mm-hmm. And it started as a branding marketing agency and back in 2011, and we started talking about, you know, yes, would you consider coming and being my partner down here? And so I started looking at what was going on with the company, and I got really excited about it because that entrepreneurial streak kind of kicks back in. I love building stuff. it wasn't a startup. He'd gotten through the startup phase. They had gotten to the point, you know, 4 or 5 million in
making
annual
money.
Revenue,
yep.
A great staff, a great team, and there's really an opportunity to take something from 4 or 5 million to 50 million.
Right.
And so that was going to be a new experience for me, but applying some of the things I'd learned in the network that I'd built to being able to do that. And so I decided to jump in and do it.
That's
and,
great.
You know, the first thing you think of is, the team is the most important thing. The
right.
people are the most important thing. And so they had a great team. And so the first thing I did was, you know, our first thing we did was now we got a guy like BJ,
right.
who had done such a great job at Yellowhammer as a business development, then the CEO, to come in and run business development
right.
for Telegraph. And there have been a few other kind of key personnel things that we have done. And we just landed our first seven-figure
awesome.
Deal
so
since I got there, and it only took a few months, so that was good, and so we feel like we're well on our way and trying to grow.
That's awesome. Five questions. Actually, it's five questions to everybody, and some of them have nothing to do with what we've talked about so far, but these are questions that I want to know personally, but I also think that a lot of people that watch or listen to us want to know, because the intricacies of your life and intricacies of my life are more interesting and more fun to people and can help people out more than the, so tell me about the White House.
Right.
That stuff is awesome. And that stuff is very, but there's 99.999% of the people watching or listening to this are never going to work in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone will be impacted by some of these things. So they're simple questions, but they're
okay.
questions that I think are great. So what does your morning routine look like?
Well, I try to get up and hit the gym first thing.
Okay.
I've gotten back into playing basketball, and
there you go.
My guys play in the evening, so that
nice.
Kind of throws a kink in that. So
yep.
if we're playing basketball, I won't work out in the
right.
morning too, because I'm realizing I'm getting too old.
Yep.
When I wake up, my Achilles are swollen.
Mm-hmm.
but I usually try to, the first thing I do when I wake up is get in the Word.
Amen.
And I have the Bible app on my phone.
Good.
And I tell you, one of the things that I love about the Bible app, and they've kind of incorporated some of these things about our brains that social media uses negatively
yeah.
to the addictive properties.
Right.
And one of those is there's a little counter in the app that shows how many days in a row you've been in it.
That's good.
Man, if I could put another, that's like
another mark.
Yes.
It's a
I love
competitive
it.
Competitive nature in
that. No doubt.
Exactly.
So that's been a good aspect
good.
Of it. I try to get in there and have a Bible reading plan that, actually, it's really, I love it. It's McLean Bible Church
okay.
outside of DC. David Platt, who
yeah.
was the pastor of Brook Hills, our pastor at McLean Bible Church, which, what a crazy.
I know.
It's just wild.
I saw a thing the other day where President Trump went to his church.
Yes.
And David prayed for him
yep.
on stage in
yep.
front of him. Man, it was awesome.
It was wild. It was just wild.
So good. Okay.
So they have a Bible reading plan that takes you through the Bible in a year.
Yeah.
Chronologically.
Oh, okay.
But it's not every word. It does kind
yeah.
of take you to that through that story, which I guess highlights for
sure.
It's the Bible, so every word's a highlight.
Absolutely.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so it's
for
a,
sure.
it's a map, maps it out, and it also has an accompanying podcast that David does every morning. It's about a 5-minute podcast.
He does it every morning?
Pray the Word.
Wow.
Pray the Word with David Platt. So if you're synced up with that Bible reading plan
yeah.
and that podcast, I can read something, and then I jump in the shower, hit the podcast, and as I'm taking a shower, I'm getting the, you know, he's talking to me about what
about
I just,
what you
read.
Just read. That's really
so
good.
It's really, really, really good. I need that kind of structure.
Yeah. I'll put that link in there so everybody can
definitely
that.
Worth
great.
Checking
That's
it
good.
Out. And so then I try to hit the gym and then into work probably around, you know, between 9 and 10.
Yeah.
And then just blowing and going all day
sure.
on that. And then, yeah, that's how it's going.
That's good. Talk about food. We obviously here,
yeah.
we deal a lot with food. I think food's a majorly important part of mm-hmm. just life in general. I think
mm-hmm.
people sometimes take it for granted. What does a day of eating look like for you?
Yeah, well, we're just now getting back to Birmingham and getting our
yeah,
feet under us, and so
sure.
it's still, and we're in between houses, so
oh,
that hurts our
hurt.
Kitchen
yeah.
ability.
Yeah, sure.
So a lot of eating out right now, but what we also do these, we do have a, like when we were in D.C. at least, we had these a delivery service
yes.
that we were doing 2 or 3 meals a week that
for
we
sure.
could plan out. That's big. The planning is really what it comes down to on
Huge.
The meals.
Absolutely.
And you know
yeah.
better than anybody. And so trying to be as clean as possible. Used to do paleo.
Yeah.
Kind of got away from paleo.
Yeah.
Just more clean
yeah.
Eating. No processed food.
I
never
Real
eat.
Food.
You're not going to catch me at any processed food, fast food
for
joint.
Sure.
Just ain't going to happen.
Absolutely. That's good. What's your favorite book of all time? Because you got to be a reader, I would imagine. But what's your favorite book of all time? Can't say the Bible. How about that?
This probably would change depending on when you ask me.
Yeah.
But Eric Metaxas' Dietrich Bonhoeffer biography.
Okay. I've seen it and haven't read it.
Is extraordinary.
Really?
I mean, truly extraordinary. I can't remember the tagline. It's Bonhoeffer is the title of the book.
I've seen it, yeah.
But it's got a really catchy subtitle because it's like Pastor, Prophet, Spy, something, whatever. It's like a really interesting thing if you know the story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was back in the World War II time frame, was an amazing theologian and pastor who was actually involved in a plot to assassinate Hitler. And so you get behind the scenes in Nazi Germany and see what Christians were going through and see, you know, someone wrestle with their faith in the midst of all this. And a lot of German Christians, the German church, kind of went along with the Nazi regime.
Yeah.
And he was one who didn't, and others who didn't. And so kind of seeing his life story is just extraordinary. So that's one that sticks out to me right
now. That's awesome. What are you reading right now?
Right now, believe it or not, I am rereading my own book.
Okay.
At the moment, because it's kind of crazy how things that I've forgotten.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I'm reading right now. I'm also reading a book called, I got to pull out the name of it here because I've got it on audiobook. I'm big into audiobooks.
I love the audio stuff.
So this one's called Surprise Kill Vanish.
Okay.
It's The Secret History of the CIA by an author named Annie Jacobson.
Okay.
I'm also reading The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz, which that's a good
great
one.
Book.
And then the other one I'm in the middle of reading is The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller. So our church small group is going through a study on that book. And so it's a really, really good book. And the other one that I would recommend that I just finished is The Trillion Dollar Coach.
Wonderful book. I finished it this past week.
Very good.
Matter of fact, so the reason I saw it's so funny. I saw that book on, it was popping up in the feed and all that kind of stuff. And then I talked to BJ and you got brought up in the conversation. And he said, yeah, Cliff's reading this. Cliff told me about this book, Trillion Dollar Coach. And so I went and got it.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Very good.
So many leadership principles. There's principles in there because you can principle yourself to death because there's all kind of theories out there. But there's a lot of practical things that this guy, who was an old football coach that I loved, there we went in and, I mean, the title speaks for itself.
It's a trillion dollar coach because he was the business coach for Apple and Google and other major Silicon Valley companies. I mean, it's just nuts what he was in the middle of. And so you're right. That's the practical nature of it is what I liked because there are some supporting documents that they provide. Even if you got the audio book that you can go on the website and see how did this guy run a one-on-one meeting?
Yes.
How did he run a team meeting? Yeah, things like that that are
so valuable.
It's a good one.
Last question. And I know you're only 35, so this is we both. I'm only 39. We've got a lot of life to live. A lot of life left. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell him?
That none of this, none of the work stuff, none of the basketball stuff at the time at 27, or none of the band stuff, none of this matters. If you lose what really matters. Okay, so it's like easy for anybody who's ambitious to get caught up in work. What can I go get? One of the things that I talk about in my book is I found this research from this woman who was a hospice nurse.
Okay.
So caring for the dying.
Yeah.
And she wrote a book that was like the 10 wishes of the dying. I can't remember the name of the book exactly. But what she realized was not a single person ever that she had cared for at the last day of their life ever said, I wish I could have spent one more day working. I wish I could have spent one more day, you know, building my company or whatever. And those things can be great, can be important. But everybody said, I wish I had one more day with my wife. I wish I had one more day with my kids. And so those relationships matter more than all of this stuff. And so I haven't always in my life taken great care of the value of relationships with people that are close to me. And so that's what I would encourage myself to do more of.
That's amazing. And that's what I deal with too. I mean, I tell people this all the time. I love to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't play golf. I've got friends, but like, we don't go out to the bars and, like I said, play golf and go boating. I like to work and I like my family. But sometimes in those different seasons of life, I work too much.
Mm-hmm.
And like right now, we're in a season where it's slow. We have to shut the kitchen down for 3 weeks because of a renovation, and I'm thankful. My wife is thankful. We're mm-hmm. all thankful because it gives us time. The thing that I feel like I need to do a better job of is not waiting for the breaks.
Yeah.
Not waiting for a structured break, a Christmas, a 4th of July, a so-and-so, a this.
Yeah.
But creating those small deposits.
No doubt. Because
here's the thing. We've said it before. You know, every overnight success was 7, 10, 15 years in the making. And it's the daily things that we did. The daily things that you did is the daily riding a yellow hammer that produced a large rock chumpy that you could sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's the daily things that you did that produced those things. And I'm firmly convinced it's the daily relationship you have with Jesus. It's the daily reading that you said that you want to put one more check that creates who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm firmly convinced that the daily time that I spend with my kids,
mm-hmm.
the 5 minutes, the 10 minutes, the 20 minutes, the hour, the whatever it is, the daily times that you're going to spend with your kids is what's going to make the difference. And man, I'm disciplined about so many things. Like, I don't freaking miss working out. Like, 365 days a year, I'm going to work out 360 of them. But like, I got to ask myself sometimes on a constant basis, why am I not doing that with my three kids and my mm-hmm. wife? And I think that sometimes that we neglect the things in our life that seem so easy because they'll, quote, understand.
Yeah.
But man, that's such a testament and such just one more revelation that needs to be so much more of a priority.
Well, it's countercultural.
It is.
So if you ask people, you know, it is cool to say, I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. And oh man, I've been out there grinding. I've been out there doing it. But actually, and I would have been the first to fall into that kind of trap. But now I get 8 hours of sleep a night.
Amen.
I don't care if you think it's cool or not. I'm gonna work again because it's important. It's
right.
important. And I think for families, it's not cool that you can't. You know, I've missed family vacations for work before.
Yeah.
That ain't cool.
No,
okay, at the time, I justified it and said, well, like, this is what I do, and I have to grind, and I have to do it. And, like, I'm down for hard work, but, like, you know, that's not what really matters in life. And I think if the second thing I would tell my 20-year-old self is life happens between the milestones. You know, you're always working for a goal. You're always working for – but you know what? I write in my book, I think that part of the president's challenge as a person is the high of becoming president, the high of getting elected president has never been repeated by being the president. And so if you latch on to nothing but these milestones, you know, you forget that life is what happens in between those. And that's what I want to get better at. You touched on it right there. It's like, you know, being intentional in these in-between times.
That's awesome. Cliff, thank you so much. This has been great.
I enjoyed it.
Cliff Sims, this was an unbelievable interview, unbelievable talk. Really, it's just more of a talk than anything. And I was so excited to have him here. We talk about his wife. We talk about President Trump. We talk about being in the White House. We talk about how he built Yellowhammer from a dude sitting there blogging about political stuff to selling his company because he had to, because he had to go work in the White House. So, hey, if you have any questions, please email us. The best email is info@milfit.co. That's info@milfit.co. Please subscribe to our podcast and share this with anybody that you have. We would love to see you, hear your comments, and everything that you have. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you had as much fun as I did in this interview. We would love to hear your input and who you would like for us to interview on the Entrepreneur Dad podcast. Also, we would love it if you would give us a review and a rating. What that does for us is it helps us so much in our business and so much with the Entrepreneur Dad podcast. If you have any suggestions or would just like to ask a question in general, please email us, thomas@theentrepreneurdad.com. That's thomas@theentrepreneurdad.com. Thank you so much. We look forward to serving you.